Chapter 25 Mind Trap. Mogedion did not want to dream the dream again, but wanting to wake, wanting to scream, did no good. Sleep held her faster than any manacles. The beginning went by quickly, a sketchy blur. No mercy, she would have to relive the rest that much sooner. She barely recognized the woman who entered the tent where she was held prisoner. Halima, secretary to one of these fools who called themselves Aes Sedai. Fools, yet they held her tightly enough by the band of silver metal around her neck, held her and made her obey. Fast movement, though she prayed for slowness. The woman channeled to make a light, and Mogedion saw only the light. It had to be Sidene. Among the living, only the chosen knew how to tap the true power, the power that came from the Dark One. And few were fool enough to, except in direst need, but that was impossible. Blurring quickness. The woman named herself Arangar, and called Mogedion by name. She gave summons to the Pit of Doom, and removed the Eidam necklace, flinching at pain no woman should have felt. Again, how many times had she done this? Again Mogedion wove a small gateway in the tent. She skimmed to give herself time to think in the endless dark, but no sooner did she step onto her platform, like a small enclosed marble balcony complete with a comfortable chair, than she arrived on the black slopes of Sheol Ghul, forever shrouded in twilight, where vents and tunnels emitted steam and smoke and harsh vapors, and a Murdral came to her in its dead-black garb, like a slug-white eyeless man, but taller, more massive than any other half-man. It regarded her arrogantly, and gave its odd name unbidden, and commanded her to come. These were not things Murdral did with the Chosen. Now she screamed in the depths of her mind for the dream to move faster, to blur beyond seeing, beyond knowing. But now, as she followed Shaidar Haran's back into the entrance to the Pit of Doom, now all flowed at its normal pace, and seemed more real than Telairan Riad or the waking world. Tears leaked from Mogedion's eyes, down cheeks that already glistened. She twitched on her hard palate, arms and legs jerking as she fought desperately, futilely, to wake. She was no longer aware that she dreamed. All seemed real. But deep memories remained, and in those depths instinct shrieked and clawed for escape. She was well familiar with the sloping tunnels ceilinged in stone daggers like fangs, the walls glowing with pale light. Many times she had made this downward journey since the day so long ago when she first came to make obeisance to the great lord and pledge her soul, but never as now, never with her failure known in all its magnitude. Always before she had managed to hide failures even from the great lord, many times. Things could be done here that could be done nowhere else. Things could happen here that could happen nowhere else. She gave a start as one of the stone fangs brushed her hair, then gathered herself as best she could. Those spikes and blades still cleared the strange, too-tall Murdral easily, but though it overtopped her by head and shoulders and more, she was forced to move her head around their points now. Reality was clay to the great lord here, and he often made his displeasure known so. A stone tooth struck her shoulder, and she ducked to go under another. There was no longer enough height in the tunnel for her to straighten as she walked. She bent lower, scurrying, crouched in the Murdral's wake, trying to get closer. Its stride never changed, but no matter how quickly she scuttled, the interval between them did not lessen. The ceiling descending, the great lord's fangs to rend traitors and fools, and Mogedion dropped to hands and knees, crawling, then flattened to elbows and knees. Light flared and flickered in the tunnel, cast from the entrance to the pit itself just ahead, and Mogedion slithered on her belly, pulled herself along with her hands, pushed with her feet. Stone points dug at her flesh, caught at her dress. Panting, she wriggled the last distance to the sound of ripping wool. Staring back over her shoulder, she shivered convulsively. Where the tunnel mouth should have been stood a smooth stone wall. Perhaps the great lord had timed it all exactly, and perhaps had she been slower. The ledge on which she lay projected above a black mottled red lake of molten rock, where flames the size of men danced and died and reappeared. Overhead the cavern rose roofless through the mountain to a sky where wild clouds raced, striated red and yellow and black, as if on the winds of time themselves. It was not the dark clouded sky seen outside on Sheol Ghul. None of that earned a second glance, and not just because she had seen it many times. The bore into the great lord's place of imprisonment was no closer here than anywhere else in the world, but here she could feel it. Here she could bathe in the radiant glory of the great lord. The true power washed around her, so strong here that attempting to channel it would fry her to a cinder. Not that she had any desire to pay the price elsewhere, either. She started to push up to her knees, and something struck her between the shoulder blades, driving her down hard onto the stone ledge, crushing the air from her lungs. Stunned, she struggled for breath, then stared back up over her shoulder. The Myrdral stood with one massive boot planted firmly on her back. Almost she embraced Sidar, though channeling here without express permission was a good way to die. The arrogance on the slopes above was one thing, but this... "Do you know who I am?" she demanded. "I am Mogedion." That eyeless gaze watched her as it might an insect. She had often seen Myrdral look at ordinary humans that way.
"Mogedion!"
That voice inside her head flushed away all thought of the Myrdral. It nearly flushed away all thought. Beside this, any human lover's deepest embrace was a drop of water beside the ocean.
"How deep is your failure, Mogedion? The chosen are always the strongest, but you let yourself be captured. You taught those who would oppose me, Mogedion."
Eyelids fluttering, she fought for coherence. "Great Lord, I taught them only small things, and I fought them as I could. I taught them a supposed way to detect a man channeling." She managed to laugh. "Practicing it gives them such headaches they cannot channel for hours." Silence. Perhaps as well. They had given up trying to learn that long before her rescue, but the Great Lord did not need to know that. "Great Lord, you know how I have served you. I serve in the shadows, and your enemies never feel my bite until my venom is working." She did not quite dare say she had deliberately let herself be captured to work from within, but she could suggest. "Great Lord, you know how many of your enemies I brought down in the War of Power. From the shadows, unseen, or if seen, ignored, because I could not possibly be a threat." Silence. And then,
"My chosen are always the strongest. My hand moves."
That voice reverberating in her skull turned her bones to boiling honey and her brain to fire. The Myrdral had her chin in its hand, forcing her head up before her vision cleared enough to see the knife in its other hand. All her dreams were to end here in a slit throat, her body going to feed the Trollocs. Perhaps Shaidar Haran would save a choice cut for itself. Perhaps... no. She knew she was going to die, but this Myrdral would not eat one shred of her. She reached to embrace Sidar, and her eyes bulged. There was nothing there. Nothing. It was as if she had been severed. She knew she had not. It was said that tearing was the deepest pain anyone could know, beyond any power to deaden. But in those stunned moments, the Myrdral forced her mouth open, scraped the blade along her tongue, then nicked her ear. And as it straightened with her blood and saliva, she knew, even before it produced what appeared to be a tiny, fragile cage of gold wire and crystal. Some things could only be done here, some only to those who could channel, and she had brought a number of men and women for this very purpose.
"No,"
she breathed. Her eyes could not leave the Khor Suvra.
"No, not me. Not me!"
Ignoring her, Shaidar Haran scraped the fluids from the knife onto the Khor Suvra. The crystal turned a milky pink, the first setting. With a flick of its wrist, it tossed the mine trap out over the lake of molten stone for the second. The golden crystal cage arched through the air and suddenly stopped, floating at the very spot where it seemed the boar was, the place where the pattern lay thinnest of all. Mogedion forgot the Murdral. She flung out her hands toward the boar.
"Mercy, great lord!"
She had never noticed that the great lord of the dark possessed any mercy, but had she been bound in a cell with rabid wolves, or with a Darath in molt, she would have begged the same. In the right circumstances, you begged even for the impossible. The Khorsuvra hung in mid-air, turning slowly, glittering in the light of leaping fires below.
"I have served you with all my heart, great lord. I beg mercy. I beg mercy."
"You may serve me still."
The voice flung her into ecstasy beyond knowing, but at the same instant the sparkling mind-trap suddenly glowed like the sun, and in the midst of rapture she knew pain as if she had been immersed in the fiery lake. They blended and she howled, thrashing like a mad thing, thrashing in endless pain, endless, until after ages, after nothing remained but agony and the memory of agony, the tiny mercy of darkness overwhelmed her. Mogedion stirred on the pallet. "Not again, please." She barely recognized the woman who entered the tent where she was held prisoner.
"Please,"
she shrieked in the depths of her mind. The woman channeled to make a light, and Mogedion saw only the light. Deep in sleep she quivered, vibrating from head to toe.
"Please!"
The woman named herself Arangar, and called Mogedion by name. She gave summons to the pit of doom, and—
"Wake, woman,"
said a voice like rotted bone crumbling, and Mogedion's eyes popped open. She almost wished for the dream back. No door or window broke the featureless stone walls of her small prison, and there were no glow bulbs or even lamps, but light came from somewhere. She did not know how many days she had been there, only that tasteless food appeared at irregular intervals, that the single bucket serving for sanitation was emptied at even more irregular times, and soap and a bucket of perfumed water were somehow left for her to clean herself. She was not sure whether that was a mercy or not. The glad thrill at seeing a bucket of water reminded her how far she had fallen. Shaidar Haran was in the cell with her now. Hurriedly rolling from her pallet, she knelt and put her face to the bare stone floor. She had always done whatever was necessary for survival, and the Murdral had been all too glad to teach her what was necessary.
"I greet you eagerly, Miakova."
The lashed-together title burned on her tongue. "One who owns me," it meant, or simply, "my owner." The strange shield Shaidar Haran had used on her, Murdral could not, but it did. The shield was not in evidence, yet she did not consider channeling. The true power was denied her, of course. That could be drawn only with the great lord's blessing. But the source tantalized, though the glow just beyond sight seemed somehow odd. She still did not consider it. Every time the Murdral visited, it displayed her mind-trap. Channeling too near your own Khorsuvra was extremely painful. The nearer, the more the pain. This close, she did not think she would survive a simple touch on the source. And that was the least of the mind-trap's dangers. Shaidar Haran chuckled, a rasp of dried, cracked leather. That was another difference about this Murdral. Far more cruel than Trollocs, who were merely bloodthirsty, Murdral were cold and dispassionate in it. Shaidar Haran often showed amusement, though. So far she felt lucky to have only bruises. Most women would have been on the brink of madness by now, if not beyond.
"And are you eager to obey?"
that rustling, grating voice asked.
"Yes, I am eager to obey, Miakova."
Whatever was necessary to survive. But she still gasped when cold fingers suddenly tangled in her hair. She scrambled to her feet on her own as much as possible, but still was hauled up. At least this time her feet remained on the floor. The Murdral studied her, expressionless. remembering past visits, it required an effort not to flinch or scream, or simply reach for Sidar and make an end.
"Close your eyes," it told her, "and keep them closed until you are commanded to open them."
Mogedion's eyes snapped shut. One of Sidar Haran's lessons had been instant obedience. Besides, with her eyes closed, she could try to pretend that she was somewhere else. Whatever was necessary. Abruptly, the hand in her hair rushed her forward, and she screamed in spite of herself. The Murdral meant to run her into the wall. Her hands went up for protection, and Sidar Haran released her. She staggered at least 10 steps, but her cell was not 10 paces, corner to corner. Wood smoke. She smelled a faint touch of wood smoke. She kept her eyelids firmly closed, though. She meant to continue with no more than bruises, and as few bruises as possible, for as long as she could manage.
"You can look now," a deep voice said.
She did, cautiously. The speaker was a tall, broad-shouldered young man in black boots and breeches and a flowing white shirt unlaced at the top, who watched her with startlingly blue eyes from a deep, cushioned armchair in front of a marble fireplace, where flames danced along long logs. She stood in a wood-paneled room that might have belonged to a wealthy merchant or noble of moderate rank in this time, the furniture lightly carved and touched with gilt, the rugs woven in red and gold arabesques. She did not doubt it was somewhere close by Sheol Ghul, though. It did not have the feel of Tel Iron Riod, the only other possibility. Swiveling her head hastily, she drew a deep breath. The Murdral was nowhere to be seen. Tight bands of Kwande seemed to vanish from around her chest.
"Did you enjoy your time in the vacuole?"
Mogedion felt icy fingers dig into her scalp. She was no researcher or maker, but she knew that word. She did not even think to ask how a young man of this time did, too. Sometimes there were bubbles in the pattern, though someone like Masana would say that was too simple an explanation. Vacuoles could be entered if you knew how, and manipulated much like the rest of the world. Researchers had often done great experiments in vacuoles, so she vaguely remembered hearing. But they were outside the pattern, really, and sometimes they closed up, or perhaps broke off and drifted away. Even Masana could not say what happened, except that anything in them at the time was gone forever. "How long?" She was surprised her voice was so steady. She rounded on the young man who sat there showing her white teeth. "I said how long? Or don't you know?"
"I saw you arrive."
He paused, lifting a silver goblet from the table beside his chair, eyes smiling at her over the rim as he drank.
"The night before last."
She could not hide a relieved gasp. The only reason anyone would want to enter a vacuole was that time flowed differently there, sometimes slower, sometimes faster, sometimes much faster. She would not have been entirely surprised to learn that the great lord had really imprisoned her for 100 years, or 1,000, to emerge into a world already his, to make her way feeding among carrion, while the other chosen stood at the pinnacle. She was still one of the chosen, in her own mind at least, until the great lord himself said she was not. She had never heard of anyone being released once a mind trap was set, but she would find a way. There was always a way for those who were cautious, while those fell who called caution cowardice. She herself had carried a few of that so-called brave sort to Sheol Ghul to be fitted with Corsuvra. Suddenly it occurred to her that this fellow knew a great deal for a friend of the dark, especially one not many years past 20. He swung one leg over an arm of the chair, lounging insolently under her scrutiny. Grendahl might have snatched him, if he had any position or power. Only too strong a chin kept him from being pretty enough. She did not think she had ever seen eyes so blue. With his insolence in her very face and what she had had to endure at Sidar Haran's hand so fresh, with the source calling her and the Murdral gone, she considered teaching this young friend of the dark a sharp lesson. The fact that her clothes were grimy added their part. She herself smelled faintly of the perfume in the wash water, but she had had no way to clean the rough woolen dress in which she fled Egwene Alvear, with its rips from her journey down to the pit. Prudence prevailed. This room must be close to Sheol Ghul, but barely. "What is your name?" she demanded. "Do you have any idea who you are speaking to?"
"Yes, I do, Mogedion. You may call me Moradin."
Mogedion gasped. Not for the name, any fool could call himself Death, but a tiny black fleck, just large enough to see, floated straight across one of those blue eyes and then across the other in the same line. This Moradin had tapped into the true power, and more than once, much more. She knew that some men who could channel survived in this time aside from Althor. This fellow was much of a size with Althor, but she had not expected the great lord to allow one that particular honor. An honor with a bite, as any of the chosen knew. In the long run, the true power was far more addictive than the one power. A strong will could hold down the desire to draw more Sidar or Sidine, but she herself did not believe the will existed strong enough to resist the true power, not once the Sa appeared in your eyes. The final price was different, but no less terrible. "You have been given distinction greater than you know," she told him. As though her filthy dress was the finest strife, she took the armchair opposite him. "Bring me some of that wine, and I will tell you. Only 29 others have ever been granted." To her shock, he laughed.
"You misapprehend, Mogedion. You still serve the great lord, but not quite as you once did. The time for playing your own games has passed. If you had not managed to do some good by accident, you would be dead now."
"I am one of the chosen, boy," she said, fury burning through caution. She sat up straight, facing him with all the knowledge of an age that made his little different from times of mud huts. As much of that knowledge as she had, anyway, and in some areas, concerning the one power, no one outstripped her. She almost embraced the source, no matter how close Sheol Ghul lay. "Your mother probably used my name to frighten you not so many years gone, but know that grown men who could crumple you like a rag sweated when they heard it. You will watch your tongue with me." He reached into the open neck of his shirt, and her own tongue clove to the roof of her mouth, her eyes fixed on the small cage of gold wire and blood-red crystal that he drew out dangling on a cord. She thought vaguely that he tucked another just like it back in, but she had eyes only for her own. It definitely was hers. His thumb stroked, and she felt that caress across her mind, her soul. Breaking a mind-trap did not require much more pressure than he was using. She could be on the other side of the world or farther, and it would not matter a hair. The part of her that was her would be separated. She would still see with her eyes and hear with her ears, taste what crossed her tongue and feel what touched her, but helpless within an automaton that was utterly obedient to whoever held the Corsuvra. Whether or not there was any way to get free of it, a mind-trap was just what its name implied. She could feel the blood draining from her face.
"You understand now," he said. "You still serve the great lord, but now it will be by doing as I say."
"I understand, Miakova," she said automatically. Again he laughed, a deep, rich sound that mocked her as he put the mind-trap away beneath his shirt.
"There is no need for that, now you've had your lesson. I will call you Mogedion, and you will call me Moradin. You are still one of the chosen. Who is there to replace you?"
"Yes, of course, Moradrin," she said tonelessly. Whatever he said, she knew that she was owned.